Well, me being up here is a new twist on the old cliche, preaching to the choir. Most of you know me as your choir director. Some of you know me as an American River College teacher of humanities and religions who also has taught two sessions on Islam here for the adult RE program. But this morning I will not be teaching or singing, so relax. There will be no quiz after the sermon. There will be no choir practice this morning. I want to thank Reverend Lucy and Reverend Roger for sharing this lectern with me, and it's a tough act to follow. And having seen Roger's one-man autobiographical show here at Theater One, I've taken a cue from him, and I will also get personal, so you get to know me better. I can speak with experience as a father, that's our son Paul on the cover of the Order of Service, with some young dad with no gray in his beard. Paul is now almost 25, and our daughter Maya is 20. Both turned out okay, I think. Sometimes we dads, like preachers and piano players, have to fake it and wing it and hope for the best occasionally. There is no training manual for fatherhood. I have less experience as a son with a dad. My father died at age 39 of pancreatic cancer when my twin brother Ken and I were 8 and our older brother Ed was 11. My memories are few and precious. Don Atwater was a tall, slim, handsome, blue-eyed man who in some photos vaguely resembles Frank Sinatra. He was a salesman, a Republican, a Rotarian, a Presbyterian Christian, a Cal graduate who was in the Naval Reserve. He loved Boy Scouts, camping, playing jazz piano, and marching band snare drum. They say he was cheerful and gentle and well-liked. Those who know him and who know me say I'm somewhat like him. Well, except for the Navy part and the Republican part and the Presbyterian part. My older brother joined the Navy right after high school, perhaps influenced by our dad's example. I have a cherished Bible inscribed by him in the late 1950s to my family from a loving father and husband. As you can imagine, he looms large in his son's memories long after he was gone. And now we three sons are dads as well, and my twin is a grandpa. So I'm going to study patriarchy, the fatherhood system, and papas, actual dads. Now, the choir is used to my bad puns and corny jokes, so I will overdo this alliteration just this once. We're going to study the power and privilege of patriarchy, its perils and pressures, but also the progress and possibilities, a new paradigm for papas. You saw it coming with my honoring our dutiful dads, difficult dads, delightful dads. First, two patriarchal systems in our world, one in the East and one in the West. Asian cultures have been profoundly influenced by philosophers like Confucius and Mencius. Confucianism was and is patriarchal, driven by the principle of filial piety, which is the proper honoring and respecting of one's parents, grandparents, and ancestors. It's controlled by a strict protocol related to all relationships, especially between men, between husbands and wives, fathers and sons. Here's an extreme example from Confucius' Analects. Confucius say, this is not a fortune cookie, Confucius say, the father conceals the misconduct of the son, and the son conceals the misconduct of the father. Uprightness is to be found in this. Wow, really? In China, social roles are very strictly delineated, and children rarely went against their fathers. Additionally, a husband could have a concubine in addition to his wife. And in communist China, the one-child population control policy further perpetuated this male patriarchy. Guess which sex was vastly preferred in a one-child family? Boys. Amy Tan, the noted Chinese-American writer, recalls in one of her memoirs that when her mother cooked and carefully served a whole duck or chicken for dinner, she and Amy stepped back while father took what he wanted, as much as he wanted, the richest, choicest portions of breast and thigh, and then her brother served himself. Amy, the youngest and female, reports that if she was very lucky, she might get a foot or maybe a wing. But a close study of Confucianism really shows us that he intended something else that hasn't always worked in Asian countries. He taught a concept of the superior man or gentleman. It's hard to translate. But he encouraged men with responsibilities at home, at work, in the government, to adopt humaneness, empathy, fairness, respect, kindness, humility, generosity. Some traditional Asian fathers did and still do take advantage of their male authority, but these ideals remain. Consider this ancient Chinese proverb. Every father calls his son, my son, whether he has talents or he has not talents. Japan, strongly influenced by Confucianism, has two somewhat new words in its language that highlight this serious problem. Karoshi can be translated as overwork death or occupational sudden death. The major medical causes of karoshi deaths are heart attack and stroke due to stress and poor diet, affecting career track men who work very long hours in very high pressure jobs. In seki jizatsu, or responsibility driven suicides, account for a quarter of all suicides in Japan today. Suicide is now the leading cause of death among young and middle-aged men. This is the downside of Confucian values combined with the Bushido or samurai code of honor that haunts Japanese male heads of households. Now, I, as a papa, inadvertently benefited from this Asian cultural protocol. I had gone to San Francisco to help our then college senior son, Paul, find an affordable room to rent after his difficult breakup with a serious girlfriend. Now, as a papa, I'm not very good at negotiating rents in a competitive, expensive city like San Francisco. I'm, after all, a musician and a spiritual guy. But with a rare stroke of mild genius, I'd remembered to bring along a copy of my pay stub and annual tax return. At the end of that desperate weekend of walking through homes with a vacant bedroom for rent, we finally found one that others had previously applied for. But the landlord, who's from Hong Kong, looked at me, looked at my paperwork, looked at my son Paul and bowed and said with a big smile on his face with accented English, "Other young men have come to rent this room, but only you have brought your father." Paul is still living there 3 years after that weekend. In the West, patriarchy also has deep roots, going back to ancient Greece, ancient Rome, Judaism, and Christianity. We find, for example, in the Bible, two shocking and disturbing stories of fathers who have put their young virgin daughters out to be gang-raped in order to protect their house guests. This is in Genesis and in Judges. When I taught this Bible passage, one of my religion students responded, "Gee, thanks, Dad." My students are shocked when I tell them that the origin of the father giving away his daughter at her wedding is really publicly acknowledging that Dad has protected his daughter's virginity. We find several Hebrew proverbs encouraging dear old Dad to physically discipline his children. You've heard them, I'm sure, before. Finish this thought. Spare the rod, spoil the child. As a young farm boy, the future conservationist John Muir was forced to memorize most of the Bible, while his strict Calvinist father would beat him for any errors in memorization. I recommend the far less well-known apocryphal Hebrew Bible book of Tobit, the story of a pious, humble, generous, caring husband and father, a very positive ancient Jewish male role model. And who can forget that classic Broadway musical, Fiddler on the Roof? Tevye, the father of three girls, clarifies his dad duties in the well-known song tradition. Who day and night must scramble for a living, feed a wife and children, say his daily prayers, and who has the right as master of the house to have the final word at home? You've got it. The papa. Oh, I said there wouldn't be a choir rehearsal. So we have Tevye, the master of the house, the male head of household. But as we know, Tevye, the character, as my mom would have said, is a bowl of mush. A sensitive papa, not a stern patriarch. In fact, this plot drives the show. Should Tevye try to control his wife and daughters as a good traditional Orthodox Jewish man should? Or will he love and support them in their desire to be happy and free? Christian tradition is strongly patriarchal as well. The old Anglican wedding vows require the bride, but not the groom, to serve and obey her husband. Paul's letters call for wives to submit to their husbands in all things. Roman law and God's eternal word supported male dominance. The Catholic Church calls all its priests father. There's a chilling line from the film Spotlight where a pedophile's victim says, "When you disobey the priest, the father, it's like disobeying God." The King James Bible is replete with dominant paternal language. Coming here from a music ministry in a progressive Christian church, I have discovered how the UUs have historically dismantled Christian patriarchal language. The old hymn, "Dear Lord and Father of Mankind," in our hymnal reads, "Dear Mother, Father of us all." And Lord of all is source of all. Well, as you can imagine, the choir got me straightened out immediately. And we've been editing our anthems. They would insist, "Keith, let's not sing Lord Almighty. Let's change that to Loving Spirit." And I thought I was hired to direct them. As Meg would say, it's like herding cats. So today we liberal progressive Christians talk about and work toward the kingdom, not the kingdom of God. A whole human family, interrelated and completely equal. Fathers differ widely in how they handle their authority and responsibility in our Western society. My father-in-law was in charge of all the finances. He doled out cash weekly to his wife for food and clothes. He never cooked or cleaned. But he finally, eventually, showed his wife how to write a checkbook and balance the finances and drive the family car when it occurred to him that she might outlive him. My dad, too, was also of that greatest generation depicted in TV classics like Father Knows Best and Leave It to Beaver. The middle class white male, firm yet wise, the family breadwinner in a suit and tie who took his wife and kids on vacation in a station wagon. Remember that line on TV when the kids have done something bad? Mom would say ominously, "Just wait till your father gets home." This stereotype of the in-charge patriarch, indeed, the whole middle-class nuclear family, is persistent. When I shared an apartment with my gay friend Tim in the late 70s, I saw his strained relationship with his father. Tim's dad was a big, tall ex-cop who wore cowboy boots and ran a private security firm. When Tim died of complications of AIDS in 1991, his parents at first shared publicly that it was cancer. They didn't use the word AIDS. Such was also the case with the D word, divorce. On TV's Brady Bunch, for example, the dad was a widower, as was the dad on The Courtship of Eddie's Father. Television is a conservative medium. How many positive images of gay dads, single dads, divorced dads, fathers of color have we seen on television until very recently? I have a deep connection to stepdads. When my father, the scoutmaster, died at 39, troop leadership fell to his assistant scoutmaster, a neighbor and father of three. When his wife died, a romance developed as he came over to our house on Boy Scout business and later to tutor me in algebra. They were married when I was 16. We had an instant Brady Bunch, four boys and two girls. My maternal grandparents were very much against this match, and my mother suffered a lot. Passing her own father in the local grocery store with their carts, greeted only by silence, barely a nod of recognition. But we mended this break, and we sons sent Father's Day cards and gifts and phone calls to our stepdad and our granddad until their deaths. Last week at Camp Norga, I met two members of our church whose father disapproved of their match due to racial differences. But they said he finally came around at the wedding. My twin brother Ken and our best, very best friend Craig both were bachelors who married at 40. Ken to a single mom of 5 children, ranging in age from 5 to 17. Craig to a single mom of 3. Ken's kids, all grown now, surprised him one Christmas with a present, inviting him to adopt them all as their children. A profound gesture. They remained very close, especially after their mother, his wife, my sister-in-law, died of cancer from smoking 7 years ago at the age of 49. Craig's stepkids, too, think of him as their real papa, their genuine father. We've recently discovered what's always been true but less visible, that there are all kinds of dads. We've called a gay papa to be our intern here. We have stay-at-home dads, single dads, foster dads, straight dads with gay kids, and vice versa. Many permutations of papa. I know from talking to you at camp, in a choir, and at coming of age, and Carl, today some of you have lost your parents, your husbands who were papas, some recently, and we celebrate them today. Let me close with 2 more papa stories. My wife Jean's niece, Mary, like Jean, was raised Catholic in Chicago. But she married Amit, who's born and raised on a kibbutz in Israel. They just had a son, Lev, and Amit, celebrating his first Father's Day today as a dad, intends to have Lev bar mitzvahed. And in a graceful, beautiful gesture of solidarity with and respect to his wife, who is not religious, and his father-in-law, George, who is, they found a priest in a church in San Francisco and had their son, Lev Alexander, baptized Catholic. After the service, I asked Amit, what would he have his son call him? Abba, he said, which is a modern Hebrew and ancient Aramaic term for father that Jesus uses to refer to God the Father in Mark's gospel. My stepsisters, whom I'm very close to, have their stories as well. One stepsister married Phil, who was a father of 3 and a relatively recent grandpa. If you follow any San Francisco or Santa Rosa news last summer, you may have heard about this double tragedy. When Phil's dad, Solomon, Saul, became weak and frail in his mid-90s, his son hired a succession of in-home caregivers to help this sometimes stubborn great-grandpa. Saul, by the way, taught me how to grow grapes and make wine at home. One pre-dawn morning, in a single, inexplicable, shocking, psychotic episode, this caregiver fatally beat Saul to death, fleeing to San Francisco in a van, apparently babbling about God's will. The man sideswiped a car, chased its owner, assaulted and resisted arrest by several San Francisco police officers, and died while being pinned to the ground. And as you know, when a large, dark-skinned, unarmed man, in this case also an immigrant, dies in police custody, it's a major news story. I checked recently, and there is still no autopsy made public. But that's another sermon. Imagine Saul's family's shock and grief and horror. In some patriarchal cultures, the son is expected to take vengeance, or at the very least, demand action, demand justice. But this Papa Phil, in a gesture that still takes my breath away, did something else. He embraced and counseled the horrified, grief-stricken widow of his father's killer, who himself was also a father. Phil and his sister and his whole family forgave that split-second lapse of sanity. They attended his memorial, along with the perpetrator's family and friends at their ethnic Methodist church. Phil insisted that that man's widow and family attend Grandpa Saul's memorial. And I attended, surprisingly, I encountered and sat with some of the caregiver's distant relatives whom I know personally from my most recent church choir position. And we became a circle transcending clan and family and ethnicity and societal expectations and barriers as we in common grief heard the Jewish Kaddish being sung. Phil, like me, no longer has any living parents or parents-in-law. And I realized while writing this sermon that the men of my generation, like my brother and Phil and Amit and my in-laws of my age, whose stories I've just shared, we are the new patriarchs. But I prefer the term in many languages, papa, papi, baba, fati. So let's embrace all those men who have navigated the complex paths of being a son or a stepson, a father or a stepfather, a partner, a grandfather. You too have these papas in your lives. Cherish those stories in spite of any difficulties you've experienced. And please tell me your stories of your papas. Thank you.